I have feels about Hal, and they're not all great, Lydia. I get this about me. And Jen, you may judge me about this, but he goes, "That's my good girl."
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I wish I hated that more.
Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Jen McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing? Because you clicked on the link.
Eee! So we're doing Howl's Moving Castle.
I'm not mad about it.
This is a movie by Studio Ghibli.
Ghibli.
You know, we had that talk earlier.
I'm not mad about it.
Yeah.
Like, you would think it's Ghibli, but we looked it up online. It is Ghibli,
mm-hmm.
The Americanized version.
Right. And this is a movie that stars a young woman named Sophie who turns into an old woman. Well, I mean, we'll get into it, obviously.
We always do.
Yeah. I think this came out in 2004.
Correct.
In Japan, right?
Correct. Dude, Hal pledged to do whatever character that they wanted him to do. And they just happened to assign him Hal in 2004.
Part of the reason why I was wondering on the date, because like if it came out in summer of 2005, do you remember what you were doing in 2005?
Probably up to no good.
Well, because I remember in 2005, I started professionally cleaning with someone in this room.
Me? Really?
Yeah.
No.
And that's why I gravitated so hard towards Sophie, is because she was a cleaner and I was a cleaner. And she didn't have any like passion in her life. She was just kind of like going through the motions in a lot of ways. So
yeah, she was given the direction by other people around her who assigned her value, ..
Right. And I read the book because the movie was coming out and I was like, I want to know what this book is all about. And I love this book.
I can't wait for you to yell at me so hard about this book.
Right.
Okay, so, Sean fact. This movie made $190 million in Japan. Worldwide, it made $236 million. It made bank, and it's widely respected as the best Japanese anime movie to be, like, internationally successful. And mm-hmm. I can't deny why it is, because it has always spoken to me. And as a non-romantic film follower, like, you aren't going to find me on the forums of some romance channel of whatever film. I mean, like, name a romance movie.
While You Were Sleeping.
Nope, not a fan.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Eat a whole bag of dicks. I'm not interested in any of that. I want Princess Bride. I want Howl's Moving Castle. I want .. because I cannot tell you off the top of my head a romantic film that is solely romantic that I find appealing.
All right.
But this ain't bad. I sign up, I hold on, and I can't wait for you to tell me why I shouldn't feel the way I feel.
I do not want to tell you about how you should or shouldn't feel. That's not what I'm here to do. I just, when I first watched this movie, I had some issues with it, mostly in how Christian Bale, like, hearing that he was like, oh yeah, I'll totally do this part. There was a part of me that's like, really, dude? It sounds like you're phoning it in some of the time.
Not going to deny it. But also, like, in the cavalcade of anime male leads, you're just kind of assigned to a part. You don't have a lot of nuance. So I feel like he's only given like two or three facets, and that he overall meets all three of them.
Right. Howl in the book is a completely different person in some ways.
I'm very excited to hear how you interpret him as a character within the movie and how you see him within the book, because I read the book like a year ago, and my ability, as the audience knows, to retain information like that is very poor.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do it.
Right.
Okay, wait. How did we come here? Or you can make the noise better. Okay, how did you show up at Howl's Moving Castle? I want to know.
Well, for me, it was trying to stake my early independence in my mid-20s. And like, oh, this is like we were talking about how Night of the Living Dead was something that you really gravitated towards. Mm-hmm. This was a movie, or I should say the book, was something that I really gravitated towards because it deals with like magic as a practical use. In the book, they have these boots where if you put your like 1 foot in, you can like zip 7 leagues. And mm-hmm. so I'm like, that's a practical use of magic. And it's not all like flash and glamour. I'm not saying that all, you know, magic is like that. But I think that there's in some other books, you can very easily see that magic is more for performance or destruction. It's not always used in a practical way, the way that we use science to mm-hmm. make things convenient.
You know, I feel like they strive towards that in the Harry Potter universe. Like magical is more of a practical means as opposed to a fanciful means.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you look into like the Henson universe and you're like, oh, it's fancy and it does this. I mean, like I play Dungeons and Dragons and I like dancing lights as a cantrip, like super hard because it's something fancy I can do right away.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not practical in terms of like getting my laundry done or paying my taxes.
Right.
So yeah, no, I get that. I like mm-hmm. I don't mind the practical use of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I get that. I, in terms of having come to this film, probably was just heavy-handed over the...
Smack you upside the head?
Probably a better way of describing it. Like, I just had a bunch of anime friends who would be like, oh, Ghibli. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, totally Ghibli. I'm super into it. And then I watched this film and I was like, romance? Magic?
Mm-hmm.
Fancy?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty?
Mm-hmm.
Like, awesome.
Yeah.
I'm in.
This is a gorgeous film, but I don't see Ghibli doing anything super ugly. Like, even when they try to do ugly things, like we'll get to it later on, mm-hmm. it's not the same kind of ugly like talking about Junji Ito. He does like horror manga that is just like the first thing I ever read by him was this horror manga where people are just drawn to these like people shaped holes in a mountain and then they feel compelled to go through them. Super creepy.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, but it's also like you get a lot of these right angles. It's very intense, and Ghibli isn't like this. Ghibli is very like kind of the opposite of it.
Ghibli seems to theatrically and artistically bring you in on a visceral level, and we're gonna get there like ASAP, guys. Don't feel weird about it, plotters. Hao Miyazaki, the director of this film, is amazing. And he brings you in so quick, so fast, in a way that is so appealing to a child, but is equally appealing to an adult. That, like, for all the other scary things, intense things, romantic things, like all of that stuff, you could set aside, like all of the things that would appeal to a quote unquote adult, you could set that all aside and then just engage with the magic he gives you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you feel that way?
Yeah, like I think about the most adult movie that he ever did, which in my opinion was Princess Mononoke, which is super adult. And that's not a movie that I'm going to show kids. I could very easily show this movie to children. But even still, like you were saying, taking away that visceral adult aspect,
mm-hmm.
I still think it's a solid story on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Along with this one, I mean, I don't think Howl's Moving Castle has like a lot of scary things in it.
Oh, I think there are plenty of scary things in this. It's just that they're appealing to a child's level of scary. And as an adult, I might rant about it being like a toothy tadpole scary, which I mean, I would not want to encounter a toothy tadpole. But in terms of scariness, I'm not as scared as that as maybe getting called out on my taxes.
Right. The terror of an adult is completely different than the terror of a child.
Right. So he does magical in a way that appeals to all scales. He does scary in a way that tantalizes a child, but does not necessarily terrify an adult. The way he terrifies an adult is a way that does not necessarily touch upon me, the novice that I am. I am not scared of war in the way, and we'll get into it, but like, I'm not scared of war in the way that he gets into it because I've been so very, very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
But we know how you came into it. You know how I came into it. Do we know how Jen came into it?
I remember distinctly seeing Spirited Away with you and your dad in the theaters. And I don't remember if that was like a re-release, kind of like an art house re-release of the film or not, but it was definitely Spirited Away that got me into Ghibli. I do think that there are other thematic things that kind of drew me in from other media, like the Final Fantasy series of video games that kind of drew me into the world of Howl's Moving Castle. And then there's also like little teeny tiny things that are very resemblant. Is resemblant a word?
Probably not, but we'll allow it.
There are a lot of things in the themes of this film that resemble both Wizard of Oz and Beauty and the Beast.
I 100% feel you on the Beauty and the Beast thing, but they did it so much better than Disney did it.
Mm-hmm.
We can discuss.
Right.
So I don't think I actually saw this in theaters. I think it was you bringing a DVD back to our house and us watching it.
God bless Blockbuster video days.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Also, Sean Fact, since we got finished with the amount of money that this made, you know, it's one of the most financially successful Japanese films in history. It was also nominated for the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature in the 78th Academy Awards.
Sean Fact.
But it lost to Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
The Were-Rabbit. I remember watching that. That has no staying power with me. I'm so mad. I'm so mad.
That's like losing to Chicken Run.
Look, yes.
Applauders. I know how I just sounded like 10 seconds ago and I was like, I'm so mad. But like, I'm legitimately mad that this movie did not win over Chicken Run. And you don't know me. My name is Naomi McQuaid. I'm a co-host for Shocked and Applaud with Lydia Malcolm and Jen McQuaid. And let me tell you, I have a place in my heart for stop animation that would stab a beautifully glistening duck in the throat with a shiv. Like, I love stop animation so much that you could say, here, look at this excellently done thing and this also mediocrely done stop animation. I would be like, well, you know which one took more effort. But Laika Productions is my heart. And previous to Laika, it was the Wallace and Gromit series, and then everything before that. I like the Wallace and Gromit series. I really and honestly do. Do I like it more than this film? No. This film is gorgeous. We open up on what?
Well, I guess we're starting.
We have to now because I'm so excited. I want to talk about it now.
Okay, so we open up to a beautiful fog rolling over some hidden landscape.
With some sheepies.
Yeah. You can see like something moving behind the clouds. Maybe a little peek here. Maybe there's a house attached to something that's moving.
Some little vanilla jelly bean looking sheeps walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And like a guy raising his shepherd's cane and he's like, we don't know what he's saying, but I think he's saying like, F you, Howl's Moving Castle.
Right. Essentially, we're seeing the moving castle at the very beginning, which we're not going to get into a description. I'd like to get into the description when Sophie sees it.
For 100%.
We also get glimpses of the scenery, the town that the moving castle is around.
Mm-hmm.
There's like this train that goes through the town, and there's like this thick plume of smoke coming from the train as the train is going over a walkway.
Yeah, it's funny because the castle is enshrouded in mist to keep it mysterious, but then the train also emits this steam that kind of enshrouds the town.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a beautiful kind of, I want to say irony, but somebody probably has a better word.
Yeah. And we also see a young woman who is making hats. And this is Sophie.
Sophie.
She is asked to go out by some of her coworkers saying, you've worked enough, Sophie. And she's just like, nah, I got work to do. And I'm like, yeah, I relate. What was the phrase that you kept saying as we were watching this?
Okay. So every time Sophie and or anyone does something that is the way I feel, I mean, like, regardless of gender, because gender's a stupid construct, I was like, girl, same.
That could have very easily been the alternate title to this film.
I mean, really?
Yeah. And
You want to go out with us? Just us and the girls? Is that Howl's Moving Castle over there?
Right.
Oh, no, no.
Girls are all...
He's only going to take pretty girls. He's not going to take you. Ha, 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 ha. And I'm like, girl, same.
Yeah, they get all giddy when they hear about the castle coming into view.
Yeah, they're all in the workshop, and she's in her own little workshop where she's like doing all the actual real work. Everyone else is like dilly dallying in the sales space, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. Sophie's the one who makes the hats.
Yeah, she looks out the window, but doesn't super get intense about it. They all run to the window like a gaggle of stupids.
Mm-hmm. And you know, then they talk about how, oh, Hal ate the heart of a girl named Martha, which is a callback to the book, because in the book Sophie has two sisters, Letty and Martha. So this is referencing Martha in the book, which is just like a cast of characters. You really get to know Sophie.
The book is so long. Hold on. I will tell you how many pages long this book is.
Martha's in the movie, but she's really not in there the way that she's in there in the book.
No, right. There's one sister. There are two sisters.
Right.
But only one's in the movie.
So the whole
book. Hold on. Oh, God bless it. The book is 429 pages long. Which is for a children's book, which I assume like adolescent children's book, super long. You're aiming at like 250 for most kids' books. This is like so long.
Well, Sophie is like, you know, a young adult. So if you wanted to go ahead and but it's written very much like you could read this to a kid late at night. But in the book, so Sophie is the oldest of three, and Martha is her stepsister. Her mom died, and then her dad remarried, and her stepmom. And the book kind of like plays with a lot of the tropes. Like she's like, oh, and you would think that my stepmom was, you know, vicious, and Martha was just, you know, and me and Letty were the ones who were always put upon. But that's actually wasn't the case. Letty was the one who grew up to be beautiful. Martha was smart, and my stepmom was, you know, just okay. She wasn't like super mean, but she wasn't like super nice, as we find out in the book. And Sophie is convinced that she just, because she's the oldest, if she sets out her fortune, she's not going to make it.
She's not going to make it
because in the land of Ingari, if you are the oldest and you go to seek out your fortune, it will ultimately fail.
She was just doomed to begin with.
Yeah,
no but wonder she was fatalist. No wonder she was a fatalist at the end of this, or at the beginning of this, or all the way through of this. Yeah. Like until like 8/9 of this, she was just like, oh, I guess I just kind of suck and everything's going to suck until it all gets sucked up.
Right. But another thing that's interesting is at the beginning of the book, even before we meet Hal, Sophie is making these hats, and whoever is, and she talks to the hats as she makes them.
Oh my God, tell me the super cute detail, because I gotta tell you, I don't feel any ways about the hat except for the one that she wears all special with her three little beads.
It's not like the hats come to life or anything.
I doubted that.
But it was more like all of the ladies who wear the hats that she makes, something great happens to them.
No.
Yeah, like if she says, oh, well, you look very plain, but you have a very nice heart and you're going to marry someone who's very wealthy. And then this lady gets the hat and she like is super nice. She marries someone wealthy and it's super cute. It's so adorable.
That is such a cute detail. Mm-hmm.
And that's an important detail in the book.
They don't put it in the movie.
Well, they could have. They could have made like a couple of lines in the way that, you know, Sophie's mom.
They could have shot the mom out of a cannon and given me fancy hats.
Well, here's the thing. They could have taken her mom and said, Sophie, how are you doing today? I wanted to let you know that hat that I took is just all the rage. Everybody loves your hats. And they say that they're almost lucky. You know, they could have put that small little line in that would.
But they,
you know,
leave her super unspecial until she meets that one lady. But we're not even there yet.
Right. So
everyone goes out for the evening.
Right.
She locks up the shop because she's a good little girl.
And here's the thing. They're not going out for the evening. They're going to sell. They're having a May Day celebration. And you can very easily see that she's closing up the shop early to go. And, you know, she's traveling through the town.
She's visiting her sister. What's her name? Hattie?
Letty. Yeah.
Not Hattie at all, Letty.
But what I like about the movie is they do indicate that, oh, this is a celebration. There's, you know, a great time going. So, like, maybe it's a half day.
In the movie, there's, like, a parade, but they don't really explain to you why.
Well, they don't tell you through dialogue. They show that to you, which is very much what film is doing. Yeah. It's kind of, like, important of filmmakers to show, don't tell. See, in the book, you kind of have to tell on some level.
Yeah, but Miyazaki has so many facets of, if you observed this, you should know this. And there are a lot of facets of Asian culture that I feel like I don't get until, like, you tell me. And that's just my poor, ignorant white self, like, missing out. And so until I imbibe something that will let me know, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So I get that there's a parade going on, but I don't know why it's special. It's probably a military thing. You read the book.
Well, it's May Day.
Plotters. I read the book. It was just a year ago, and yeah. I don't remember all of the things that Lydia knows.
Right. So it was a May Day celebration in the book.
Okay.
Which I don't, it's like this British holiday I don't know anything about, but well, I guess for us, May Day, maybe it's like a springtime celebration, maypoles and everything.
May Day is a public holiday usually celebrated on the 1st of May or the first Monday of May. It's an ancient festival of spring and current traditional spring holiday in many European cultures. Dances, singing, and cake are usually part of the festivities.
Sophie's hometown is supposed to be based on a place in France.
Mm-hmm.
Then it makes perfect sense that they would be celebrating a May Day celebration.
Mm-hmm.
So she's wandering out of the shop ostensibly a little early because she's going to go visit her sister.
Right. And then she like comes across some soldiers. And
oh my God.
They're both being kind of creepy.
Okay.
Like at one point. The first guy is all like, hey, you're a cute little mouse. And then the other guy comes around. He's got this mustache and his friend's like, oh, see, she doesn't like you with the mustache. It's like, oh, this is what the second guy says. This is what the second soldier says. I think she's even cuter when she's scared. And I'm
that's
like,
that's when you get the cannon, motherfucker. You get in that cannon. I shove you down with some freaking black powder. And then I like light it with an oversized a table leg that I fashioned from a torch that I got from Ben, and I set it on fire, and then you blast into the atmosphere because fuck you, motherfucker.
I just kind of hurled. I threw up a little bit in my throat. I'm just saying.
You know what? The same difference.
But you know what? But you know who comes to Sophie's aid? Do you know who comes to Sophie's aid?
Oh, I don't know, Lydia. Who comes to Sophia's aid?
Oh, I would say it's a dashing young gentleman with his flaxen hair.
Does he have a diamond spotted frock, perhaps?
Yes.
Is his hair platinum?
I think it's just blonde.
It's platinum. Does he have an aquamarine facet around his neck?
Yes.
Does he have beautiful emerald earrings dangling as if they were chandeliers from his ears?
I wasn't paying attention.
Doesn't
to
matter. Does he have a pair of high-waisted black briefs?
Are we gonna be here all day while you like,
honey? Does he have a beautiful pair of pale cream-colored alligator shoes?
I'm not going to get back to my apartment in time to feed my turtle.
Is his skin a beautiful porcelain? Are his eyes a pair of aquamarines?
I mean, maybe.
I might know who you're talking about.
Oh my goodness. You spent the last 2 minutes.
I'm not embarrassed about it. Look, I only read the book once, but I've seen this movie at least half a dozen times. This is Howl.
This is Howl Jenkins.
Or
Wizard Pendragon?
Pendragon. He's Pendragon or Jenkins. I'm inclined to go with Jenkins because of that meme from like several years ago that's like, Leroy Jenkins!
In the book, Hal is very much a Leroy Jenkins. He just kind of like barrels through. Like the first time he meets Sophie, he's just like, you know, kind of like drinking and like, hey, little mouse, because she's wearing this her dress is like gray and she has like this very like, she's got brown hair, she looks very like timid, and so she's scurrying around. So Hal's just like, hey mouse, you're cute. Like essentially, but he doesn't say cute, he's just kind of like very much like some rando in the street who's like, you know, hey you. But he doesn't like catcall her. He's just sort of like points her out, which knowing what I know about the book and everything that kind of leads up, like in the movie and in the book, Hal has some knowledge about Sophie before she has knowledge about him.
That seems very obvious.
Mm-hmm. Especially
because doesn't he? Okay, so the soldiers, he's like, you got to go somewhere. And mustache and blonde brown eyed guy, they like immediately foot. I'm sure there's a better way of saying that.
Yeah,
what's the military way of being like, foot, 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 foot? How do you do that? Jen, you know better than me.
You just mean the left, right, left kind of thing?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. They left, right,
march.
Right. They march right. He's like, you were just going. And they're like, And then they're like, whoop, 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 whoop. Because he makes the magic style leave the scene.
Right.
And then he's like, you better come with me. And she's like, And then
she's too scared to say no.
So she puts his arm in hers. And then he leans in. He's like, sorry, girl. I'm being followed right now. And she's like,
and like they're walking very casually and you see these like mysterious figures kind of like circling around them.
Yeah, well, not just that, it's just they're magic blobbing out of the wall and they look like the melted blobfish. You know how they bring those like angler fishes up from the bottom of the sea and then all of their cells burst inside of them and they become this blobfish that you recognize?
No. Is that the fish that has the face of a man with a very large nose?
Yes, except that's what happens when they're brought up too fast under pressure. That's how they looked on our level. Underneath the sea, they're all like scary and angular. Mm-hmm. It's just that we rupture all of the cells in their body in a very tragic way when we bring them up very fast. And it's super sad. But if you turned those super ruptured sad creatures into black tar beings, they would be the witches of the waste's underlings.
Yes. And they surround him and Sophie.
They have little straw hats and little spats and little slacks.
Yeah.
And like black torsos. And they're like.
Very reminiscent of the spirits in Spirited Away as well.
I mean, in the way that they're a bit tentacly.
Yeah, very fluid.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would get that. I would get behind that.
Yeah, like there was that river spirit that came in with all of the junk in Spirited Away.
Yeah, the No Face? No Face?
No, that wasn't No Face.
No Face didn't have tentacles.
No,
He had gold. Gold. He had gold.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm talking about like when Chihiro in Spirited Away, the completely different movie. Sorry.
Oh my God.
Never mind. We're not going to go down that road because we've been going on a lot of tangents so far. Okay. So anyways, they're surrounded by blobmen. And
he's like, well, we got to go. And
what does he do?
They fly up all of like Aladdin in like Aladdin and they like go straight up into the air. And he's like, quick. Step, 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 yeah, step.
Put your feet down and start walking.
And she's like, okay. And she starts walking her feet on air. And then they walk in tandem. And then I'm telling you, plotters, within the first 2 minutes of this film, they are walking on air together. And he delivers her to the balcony of her sister's work.
Right. So,
oh my God.
At the beginning of that scene, everything creepy with the soldiers and Hal kind of coming in and rescuing Sophie, that was always something that I kind of had an issue with.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, not the fact that he was rescuing her, but it was more the fact that she didn't really have a lot of agency. She wasn't like fighting to have agency, but she was so scared.
Did we talk about the mustache guy?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, go on.
But it was also just like the moment with Hal kind of coming in and saving her. There's always just like this raging feminist in me is always like, no, you have to do that on your own. Come on, Sophie. You can do that on your own. You don't need a man to help you.
Well, she told the guys to go away.
Yeah,
but they didn't.
Right.
So the issue is that she needed a big, strong man to save her.
Well, she needed someone who was going to be much more assertive than she was in order to get her out of that situation.
But then he drops her off the balconies and he's like, okay, so here's the thing. Can I just tell you my simp moment for this whole part?
I mean, you probably have more than one.
I have simp moments through this entire film.
Yes.
I have feels about Hal and they're not all great, Lydia. I get this about me. And Jen, you may judge me about this, but he goes, that's my good girl.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I wish I hated that more.
You know, all this talk about patriarchy has got me really hungry. Can we head over to Craft Services real quick?
Let's get something to eat.
Yeah, I could eat.
Nosh.
Hi, this is Tony, the host of the Flicks X-Rayed podcast. Each week, I am joined by guests.
Meow.
Hello.
Yo.
Why, hello there.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
And we have a roundtable discussion where we dig deep and X-ray a bunch of our favorite films and some really terrible ones, too. We really like to go back and take a look at films that may be forgotten, maybe in the past, and still lovable films. If you want, you can follow us on all the major platforms, iTunes, Google, Stitcher.
If you want to find out more, you can find us online at www.flixxray.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you want to reach out to us. Good night, Internet.
Yeah.
What's up, Hushlings? I'm Declassified Dave.
And I'm Mystery Mike.
We're joined by our protege, Slick Fronk Sanders.
Fronk Sanders here. How's it going, Hushlings?
Join us Mondays for the Hush Hush Society Conspiracy Hour as we take new initiates through the dark secrets, hidden truths of the underbelly of the conspiratorial world. Each season finale ending with a live show. Follow along on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and listen on all streaming platforms at our link tree, linktr.ee/hushhushsociety.
Remember, the best kept secrets are hidden in plain sight.
That was delicious.
It was divine. Just about as divine as Hal and Sophie walking through the air, which despite any kind of issues I may have had with, you know, just like slightly earlier and even slightly at the end of the scene, it's still like, this is super adorable. And yeah, it does make Hal very attractive.
Yeah. Okay. So I will give you, with no question, about 75% of this film, me being an absolute like about Hal.
Yeah.
I can't help myself. A very attractive narcissist who happens to be like trying to help his besties. Like, honey, mm-hmm. I'm not mad about it. You're very attractive and you want to help me out.
I'm just saying, like, I'm not trying to judge you too hard because you should have seen me when I went to go see Phantom Menace in the theater oh so many years ago, and I was swooning over Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor, you Ewan, might say?
Yes.
Ewan McGregor?
Ewan McGregor. Have you ever seen him in a kilt? Have you ever seen him in a kilt?
Jen, have I ever seen him in a kilt?
I don't know.
I don't know, but I wouldn't be mad about it.
There's no way you can. Anyway, so I'm not judging you too hard for what you like. You are allowed to like what you like, and you are allowed to express that.
I would never yuck on your yum, and I feel like that is reciprocal. But I gotta say that Hal doesn't got me mad. And then we're like only 2 minutes in, and he's like walking her through the air, mm-hmm. and he's like, "You're doing such a good job." And you're doing such a good job. And then he's like, "Who's my good girl?" And I'm like, "Me." Me, Hal, I'm your good girl. And I know that is me subbing real hard, but I can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
So Hal drops her off in a balcony. Turns out this is the balcony of where her sister Letty works.
How did he know? Did he take her notes, her directions, or whatever?
He's probably been spying on her. Like I said in the book, Sophie, all of the hats that she makes in the book have been having some interesting properties. So maybe that's gotten the attention. That's what I always assume is what got Hal's attention at the beginning of the book. They probably stayed it somewhere in the book as well. So.
Okay. So then we meet Letty.
Right.
She runs upstairs. She's like, "Somebody said you just floated onto the balcony.
And you have to be careful because there are wizards and witches. And if that was Hal, he would have eaten out your heart."
He only does that to pretty girls.
Oh, Sophie. And then we hear a laugh track. I don't know.
Is there really a laugh track?
No.
There should have been, because I'm like,
yeah.
pretty younger.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty younger sister.
Yeah.
Eat a whole bag of
Right. So there's this thing about like women who are very plain looking, very mousy, and how they just don't always feel like they're as pretty. And then you have the pretty sister who's all like, "Oh, you look just beautiful. But, you know, you're not getting all the guys because I'm the pretty one." So I just kind of roll my eyes at Letty. But I
did
do.
Did I sigh hard enough into that microphone? Could you hear that? I'll do it again.
It's not just sisters, though. Sometimes it's the cute girl finding the mousy girls to hang out with so that she appears more cute in comparison to the people right. around her.
Okay, so here's the thing. As a person who has shown up on the scene as quote unquote, yelling too loud into the microphone. As the person who has showed up on the scene as the personality of the friend group, I'm over it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I was trying to process this the other day, and maybe I need to process this in our therapy session just now. Sorry, Shocked and Applauded is a therapy session hosted by Lydia Malcolm, Jen McQuaid, and Naomi McQuaid. I've only ever been hit on people who were severely emotionally traumatized.
So am I supposed to raise my hand at this point, or
did you want to tell me I'm wrong?
Are we married?
Did you want to tell me I'm wrong?
Am I the psychologically?
Hold on a second. Did you want to tell me I was wrong?
at some point, I have to realize that we're on air, and to tell you that you're wrong mm-hmm. would be a horrible thing
mm-hmm.
because you're the host.
Mm. Tell me I'm wrong, Jen.
And I'm the underling editor.
Mm. You hold all the rings. You could edit all of this out. I'm just saying, okay, let me caveat. Aside from Jen, anyone who has ever hit on me was like, well, I guess I'm so emotionally damaged, I should only ever hit on Naomi.
Well, okay, so as someone who has probably been hit on, I wouldn't even say I've ever been hit on, even by, like, my boyfriends, all two of them. So, like, I'm just saying, congratulations that there are someone who's interested.
Somebody who's like, hold like, on I'm a not, second, hold on a second.
I'm sorry they're all trolls, not except for Jen.
Except for Jen. It's like, I could kill myself, or I could throw myself at the least attractive, most intellectually engaging person I've ever met.
Can we make this more about the sister again?
I mean,
this is the sister's fault.
Okay.
No, so actually, I wanted to say her sister is not that, like, she isn't, like, digging into it. She's just like, come on, Sophie, you have other talents and you should focus on those. She's not digging into it. She's just more like, come on, Sophie, you're better than this. You're talented. You have good things about you. She doesn't, like, grill her because
she's
had this conversation. Let me finish my thought.
Do it.
Thank you. Her sister still cares about her.
Yes.
Her sister, even though she's like getting men fawning on over her, and
yes.
Sophie is only attracted by creepy soldiers and a man who wears a diamond jacket.
Gross.
That was Hal, though.
Still gross.
But it's still one of those things where her sister isn't like as hung up about it as Sophie is. Because there is a difference between someone who is aesthetically pleasing by an entire society standards mm. and someone who doesn't care about those standards, who still sees themselves as being attractive in their own right. Like, there's a meme that I absolutely love where it's Squirtle just like smelling a flower and then being happy about the smell of the flower. And it says wanting to hang out with yourself because you're a unique and interesting individual all on your own. And I'm like, yes, high five that Squirtle because that is my life goal.
High five that Squirtle.
Yeah.
Hashtag high five that Squirtle.
But it's like, you know, being okay with being who you are, even if you're just, you know, another daisy instead of a sunflower.
References. If you'd like that reference, please feel to check back to our Harold and Maude episode some many, many moons ago. I am with you. I am for you. I am 100% with you and for you because the people who I've actually thought that have thought me attractive are few and far between. And they often are like, oh, it's more than your aesthetic. It's more than the intellect you present. It's the soul underneath it all. And who the doesn't want someone to love you for the soul beneath it all.
Amen.
I'm with it. And if I didn't feel like I was in a room with beautiful souls, I don't know what I would do with myself.
Right. And I think there's a part of Sophie that is her journey throughout the entire movie, figuring out who she is mm-hmm. and to be okay with it.
More than to be okay with it.
Right.
I mean, no, I agree with you.
Yeah.
She needs to be okay with it. But to have passions beyond that.
Right. You're more than just how you look to society. You are also how you see yourself.
Yes.
And there's a lot of like Sophie seeing herself in one way, but she isn't that way yet.
Well, and Miyazaki, he did not put a lot of emphasis on this. Oh my God, we haven't gotten there yet.
We're only 15 minutes into
the
movie.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. Where are we? Okay, I didn't want to get to this part. Okay, so he walks through the thing, talks to her sister. His sister's like, you need to go back home. He's like, you should hang out here and go back home later. Her sister's like, okay, well, I got to go sell these eclairs. Okay, mm-hmm. so then she heads back to the shop.
Right.
She locks the door behind her. She goes to hang up her hat. She turns on a hurricane lamp, really. Mm-hmm. And then the door clicks open behind her. She's like, oh, silly me. I must have forgotten to lock the door. The Witch of the Waste is behind her.
Yeah, she doesn't know it's the Witch of the Waste. It's just this, like, it's this woman, top heavy. And when I mean top heavy.
Like, she looks like 4.5 pounds of flour poured into a 2-pound sack.
Right. And she's wearing, you know, this black outfit. Mm-hmm. She has her face, like, sort of, like, you know, hidden with the hair and the hat.
Goofy hat, red hair, ostentatious eye makeup. She's just like, this tacky shop is all these tacky hats, but nothing's more tacky than you.
As someone who works in the service industry, Any customer who's going to come in and start criticizing everything.
If you're here 5 minutes before I close, f*** you. If you're here after I lock the door, double, quadruple, f*** you.
But it's the Witch of the Waste, which we find out like a few minutes into the scene. Mm. And so it makes sense that she would be kind of a villain.
Yeah.
Digs hard into that role.
Yeah, she's like, okay, so Sophie, being amazing, is like, we're closed. You need to leave. Mm-hmm. Then she gets insulted and she's like, we're closed. You need to leave.
Sophie is assertive and the Witch of the Waste is like,
how? She's not rude.
Right.
You have to admit.
She's assertive. She's like, no, you need to go. We're closed. Mm-hmm. And the Witch of the Waste is like, well, then fine. And she's just rude and like says, how dare you treat the Witch of the Waste that way? And so she like whooshes out the door.
Yeets herself out the door, but she leaves Sophie with a curse. Mm-hmm. And the door is shut. She's crouched down. You look at her and she doesn't look the same.
Mm-hmm. She does mention to Sophie, by the way, you can't tell anyone that you're under that spell. That's important.
She's a whole bag of dicks.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I love an over-the-top villainess, but she's very much like, ha-ha-ha, I've got something of her on you right now.
Oh.
Like, non-verbally. She's just like, I'm so fancy, and you're such a plain piece of crap. And Sophie's like, I am a plain piece of crap, but, like, I'm in charge of the story now, so you, like, gotta go right now.
So...
You gotta say it's true. Like, the only way, the only reason she's putting up with that is that she's a service level mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason the Witch of the Waste is getting away with it is she's this highfalutin piece of crap.
Yeah.
And so they come at each other and they meet at this level and then they depart at this level. But the one who has gotten it bad all this time gets it worse.
Mm-hmm. Sophie,
and how many minutes are we into the film?
I think we're 17 minutes in at this point.
Oh my God.
So that's when we notice something about Sophie. She doesn't look young anymore. She looks dun dun dun.
Like 90 years old. She's hobbled over. She's like, she got punched in the gut before the door got closed. Mm-hmm. And then her hat was, which was, okay, sorry, congruency wise, it was on a shelf on the other side of the room. But she goes to pick up her hat. And then she looks down at her hands and she's like, and then she like grabs her face and she's like, and she's pulling down her cheeks and she's like, I'm so old.
She goes to a mirror and she like is so certain that it can't happen that she like walks away almost like she's walking out of the room. And then she turns around and she goes back to the mirror and she creeps and she looks at the mirror a little bit and then she freaks out and her braid freaks out with her.
Okay, so one of the greatest things about this film that if you've seen it but you haven't noticed is that whenever somebody has an extreme emotional reaction, their hair changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it floofs up or it gets shorter or it like raises up around their eyebrows or something. And I don't know if that's like the primordial thing where you can like wiggle your ears or your nose or whatever and you can just happen to like make your hair do things. But like it's awesome. Right. It is such a subtle detail. That when you notice it, like, you can't help but love it because you're like, her ponytail is pretty short as an old lady.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, as she's like, it's like, in the back of her head, like, right. It goes, it's probably 5 inches long and then it goes, like, 3 inches. And so it shoots up the back of her head like a tail.
Right. And Sophie's freaking out, but she does that thing that I do when I'm stressed. I just pace around and talk to myself.
She walks out of the store, which is how she'd get to her room.
To the back.
And then which is a courtyard. Mm-hmm. And then she walks back into the building and she's like, oh, no, no, no. And then she walks back out and she's like, oh, you should probably just sleep on it. It's nothing at all. And then she walks right back in. She does this 2 or 3 times before she decides to go to bed,
right.
Which is 9 out of 10, my plan.
Mm. In the book, Sophie's reaction to getting turned into an old lady is just more like, yeah, this makes sense. Or as you would say, girl, same. Yeah. Next morning, Sophie is all sick and she asks her mom to, you know, go away.
Her mom busts into the store from France or somewhere. It's like France. Okay.
Kingsbury is where she specifically says.
So she's in her mom's from Kingsbury?
No, she says, look at what I got from Kingsbury. It's another town in the book. So it's like throwing and something from the book.
So her hometown is based in France in the movie. But when her mom comes back and is like, look at my fancy new hairdo. God bless me. Fancy new hat. She has this kind of, this turn of the century French hat thing. Okay, so like back in the day, they would have these super elaborate French hats that had all of these scenes on them. You might, what I equivocate it to now is like, oftentimes you'll see like hair competitions where people like, one specifically comes to mind where somebody made somebody's hair into like a helicopter, mm-hmm. or like it, like the blades turned and everything. Well, they would do this kind of thing, but with hats back in France back in the day. So the mom comes back and she's got what you pointed out is cannons sticking out on either side of her hat.
It's a whole scene. You got this bird. You got the grill of the front of a train. You mm-hmm. got cannons. Mm-hmm. It's like it is all over the place. And this would have been a perfect time where if they wanted to kind of like hint to the audience that Sophie's hats were like, you know, maybe making things good for people, then this would have been an opportunity for her mom to say, oh, all of those hats that you made, they sold really well in Kingsbury. People also know about you over there because they say that your hats are lucky. Because Sophie's pretty much the only one who's making hats in the movie.
She really is the only one in the workshop. Mm-hmm. But her mom, to her credit, is like, where's Sophie? Mm-hmm. Obviously the
she's
only
really
workhorse.
So yeah.
She's worried about it, but she's the only workhorse in the house. Mm-hmm. So she goes upstairs. She walks around the courtyard upstairs to find where Sophie is. And then she knocks on the door and Sophie's like, don't come in, I have a chip record. She's like, you sound awful. She's like, she's obviously done up and like way beyond her years, but she's like, you sound awful. You sound like some horrible 90-year-old woman. Like the worst thing you could be was a 90-year-old woman.
Right.
Not just a woman with a cold.
Right.
Because Sophie's mom, like sideways with a rake. Like I hate Sophie's mom so much.
So even in the book, Sophie's mom is a bit of a dunce because she's like, Sophie's sisters are like, you know, I think mom is taking advantage of you because even though you're an apprenticeship, you should be making money. And so Sophie actually brings that up to her stepmom and her stepmom's like, oh, of course you should be making money. And so she does pay her after she asks about it, but she doesn't like. So there's this thing when you work for someone who you feel like you're being taken advantage of. They go ahead and don't offer you something. They wait until you ask.
Oh, you wanted the bare minimum?
Yeah.
Oh, let me give you the bare minimum.
Right. And so her stepmom, so Sophie's kind of like going back and forth whether or not she likes her, whether or not her stepmother is taking advantage of her.
Her stepmother's garbage.
So either Sophie feels like she's like kind of on the fence about her stepmom. And
garbage.
Yeah.
She's a garbage person. She belongs at a trash heap and she is garbage. And I hate her. I hate her so much.
Yeah.
She's a worthless character. If she did not exist in this film, she would have cut out at least 6 minutes of this film that I did not have to see. And in a children's movie, air quotes, whoosh, whoosh, children's movie of 2 hours in length, I could have done without her 6 minutes. Whoosh, whoosh, right out.
Right. Yeet.
Yeet that bitch.
So Sophie's like, you know, I can't stay here looking like this. I can only, you know, fake an illness for so long. So she grabs a piece of cheese.
A piece of bread that looks like challah.
That bread looks delicious.
Yeah, it does. Challah's delicious.
And Sophie catches a ride to the waist on the back of a cart.
Where are you going? A little bit farther the way you're going. And I was like, that's pretty smart.
Yeah. And like even when she's like walking over that bridge where the train goes over, there's a young man who's like, oh, do you want me to help you down the stairs? And she's like, no, I'm fine. Oh, that was so nice that there was a young man who tried to help me down the stairs.
She doesn't act like an old lady. She acts like a person who's doing the best they can, who doesn't think much of themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's really what affects her physical evocation, is that she thinks she looks matronly and old, and she subscribes to this aesthetic for herself. And as much as I have seen people dress beyond their years, she really does wear like a high-necked, high-waisted.
Even when she's young, she still dresses pretty old.
Yeah, no, it's the same dress, mm-hmm. Liz. She's like, oh, I guess these clothes finally suit me.
Yeah.
And so like, it makes a lot of sense, but she doesn't necessarily equate it to other people's behavior towards her mm-hmm. until it comes to Howl.
Right. So Sophie she's heading up north of where that guy dropped her off, and
she's just headed uphill out of town.
And
she's headed into what we call the wastes.
Do you think that she had a plan when she left that she was going to go to Howl's Castle? Because I don't get the feeling like she did. I feel like she was just on instinct and was like, I need to go somewhere.
I feel like she was headed towards witches or wizards who could help her with her mm-hmm. ailment.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
She was like, well, I'm cursed, so who can help me? Witches and wizards.
Right. And so while she's taking a break, She is munching on cheese and bread, which is a delicious break snack.
I'll never make it on these legs.
And she sees a stick sticking out of a bush.
That would make a good walking stick.
So she fiddles with it, and she's like, oh, this is really difficult getting it out.
I'm not going to let you take advantage of this 90-year-old lady.
And she, like, puts as much pressure as she can. And this stick thwarps up. And
she's
it's
like, oh! I'm sorry. She was like, oh!
And it's a...
I'm sorry, Jen. Oh! If that helps.
Oh!
According to Lydia's taste.
What?
This is where we turnip head.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You like turnip head, you sicko.
Not because he's a scarecrow.
You like turnip head. Tell me you don't like turnip head.
I mean,
we're going to fight about it later. We might as well admit it now.
I have something that I'm going to state at the very end of this, and I think it's going to work out and everybody's going to be happy. Okay.
You feel like I'm going to turn my opinion about
it? I don't think you're going to change your opinion. It's just how it plays out in my head. And I think it's just how, what is it? Love triangles should just always end in this way. But I'm not going to bring it up until later.
I'm excited to hear how you think love triangles should end.
Oh, yeah. Anyways. So there's this scarecrow. He's got a turnip on his head. And she's just like, turnips aren't my favorite vegetable, but I guess you're okay.
You're my least favorite vegetable.
Right.
Oh, my God. It's so good. She's like, yeah, it's just a scarecrow. How are you standing up like that? I hate turnips. All right. Yeet.
So she like is like, okay, well, I got to get going. Bye. And so like she's walking and the wind's coming down and she's like, oh, it's so cold. What does she say? She says, I'm fatter than ever, but the wind blows right through me. And I'm like,
correct.
Yay! That's what happens when you get old.
That is exactly what happens when you get older.
And then she hears this knocking coming up from behind her, and it's Turnip Head with a cane.
Which is what she needed when she tried to pull him out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. Whether he heard her or not, I don't know. But it still was like, oh, thank you. Because in the book, Sophie is terrified of the scarecrow.
Like really, really scared?
Absolutely scared. Like there's a moment where she is trying to leave the castle and she can't because the scarecrow's like trying to get into the castle.
He's too tall, Lydia.
I know. He doesn't know that. But I mean, Sophie's relationship with Turnip Head is so adorable in this movie.
In the movie, is it as adorable in the book, or is she just scared of him the whole time?
No, she's just scared of him for the majority of it until like the very end when everything kind of comes crashing down.
He gathers. Okay, so she goes, if you need to do something, find me a place to stay for the night.
Yeah. And so he goes off and she's like, I think I'm getting cunning in my old age. And my thought was she's probably getting rid of it because she doesn't want it around.
I mean, I'm not mad about that. It's just that like, I don't know if that's what I would think of as cunning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, so Turnip delivers the castle, the moving castle that we saw at the beginning.
Yeah, it only cuts away like a few seconds. And then all of a sudden he hops back up again. And then the castle lumbers into view ahead of behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, when I said I wanted this place to stay, I didn't mean that. And then it lumbers over her body. And it's very like, is she going to get stepped on? And then he hops ahead, right? And he goes to stand next to the tailgate, which is like this weird tail door thing that's sticking out the bottom of the castle.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, I guess I got to go get on this castle.
Mm-hmm.
And like she runs after it. And she's like, do you want me on it or not? Because it's like just out of reach, like a la the caboose scene of like every western you've ever seen of somebody trying to catch the train,
right?
And then he like the castle kind of stops and sloops her up onto there, and she loses her shawl or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Turnip Head goes to go get it,
right?
It's so cute.
Yeah, because he brings that shawl back and she's like, oh, thank you for my shawl,
it was very nice meeting you.
Can we talk about the castle though? Because it is like this mash of all sorts of things. They have like houses up in there, they got stovepipes, they have a mast to a ship.
Okay, Sean fact.
Yeah,
Howl's Moving Castle, and this is gonna hurt your feelings, is made out of paper mache.
Why is that going to hurt my feelings?
I don't know if it's... I wanted it to... I wanted it to...
Okay, okay.
I wanted it to hurt your feelings.
Okay, we'll say that again.
It's made out of paper mache.
Aww.
Suck it. You can feel however you feel about it.
I don't really care. I still think it's fun.
Okay, so the only real rooms are Hal's room, Markle's room, Sophie's sleeping area, and the bathroom, and the foyer.
Foyer.
Everything else is paper mache to make the place seem intimidating, including the guns on the front. Okay, plotters, if you need a description, and I'm your resident descriptionator. It looks like an anglerfish mixed with a couple cannons, mixed with every steampunk dream you've ever had, mixed with every cottagecore daydream you've also ever had, and some chicken feet.
So do you remember Labyrinth?
Yes.
The lady who has that stuff on her back.
Wait, we're talking about Jim Henson's The Labyrinth, not Pan's Labyrinth, which we have covered on this podcast.
Correct. This is the one with David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly when she was like 17.
It's so stimulating being your head. Go on.
So there was that moment where Jennifer Connelly is like, you know, trying to get to the castle and everything, but she gets stopped by this lady who just has a bunch of junk on her back.
Yes.
She's all concerned about stuff.
Yeah, she might be my own personal demon, but I feel you. Go on.
Right. So it's all negative in the movie, but imagine her, but not in a bad, as like a bad way, just like a super nice way. She's like super nice, and she just hoards a lot of stuff, and she just carries it on her back. That's what the outside of this castle looks like.
We thank you, Aplotter, for journeying with us to the end of part one of our review of 2005's English dubbed version of Howl's Moving Castle. We have plenty more to cover and can't wait to reveal our shocked and applaudable moments at the close of the month. Needing more fantasy or time travel in your life? It's 2020. We wouldn't put it past you. That's basically the 80s, provides some comedic relief with its recent episode of The Neverending Story. You'll find that they have several of the same humorous comments we made when we reviewed it way back in January of 2019. And On Second Watch has a great two-part review of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure to hype you up for the newly released movie in the trilogy. Hey, this is your audio engineer and princess from a completely different castle, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud is available on just about every podcast platform available? If you're listening on our website, shockedandapplaud.com, the top of our site has links to wherever you find yourself listening most. Why not take a moment to subscribe in your favorite app to help us boost our continued listener levels and help with advocating our show in podcast ratings? We'll be back in 1 week for part two of our review of this fantastic New Age animated fairy tale. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.